HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by Hilary Geary. Hilary is the CEO and founder of the Executive Connections Group. Delighted, Hilary, to have you on the podcast. How are you today?
I'm really good, Declan. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Hilary, just as we were chatting before we started the podcast, I mentioned to you, I love chatting to people who've worked in the industry for a period of time because I love how it's changed and hearing some of those war stories. But before we get to that, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your own career journey? How did you get into recruitment? How Executive Connections came about, that sort of thing?
Great. Okay. Well, I didn't fall into it, which was quite interesting. A lot of people have fallen into it, and I think that forms part of their bio. I actually sought, you know, a career within it, which is quite interesting. When I left school at the ripe old age of 18 or 19, I ended out, you know, going into college, which I didn't like after about 3 or 4 weeks. So it kind of gives you an idea of my impetuous nature, which probably sits quite neatly within recruitment. So I left that and commenced work, and I worked in the hotel industry. And then I specifically sought my way into recruitment. I had family members who were working within HR, and I had family members working within executive search. So it just seemed a perfect segue to have that kind of customer centricity within my previous role within the hotel industry, and then moving across into this area. So at the time, the IFSC had just established itself. It was 1989, 1990. I commenced my recruitment, you know, work as such in 1989 or 88, I think it was. So when I left my previous employer at the ripe old age of 25, I decided that I was going to align my skill set to the financial services. And whilst I've never worked a day in the life within financial services, you become pretty adept at recruiting and understanding the various complexities within various areas within that space. So we quickly, you know, aligned ourselves within that sector. Back in the day, I used to be dealing with organizations like, you know, JP Morgan today, but prior to that, they would have been Chase Manhattan Bank. And prior to that, they would have been Fund Admin Custodial Trustee Services. So, I mean, I've seen it all. I'm 33 years in recruitment now. So, you know, that's how we basically evolved. So as a result of that, you know, I ended out, you know, building the team out and specifying specific divisions within financial services. And then in the latter couple of years, we've built a tremendous reputation within the marketing and executive sales, you know, area. And that's headed up by one of our directors who has come from within that background. So we've kind of segued into that kind of MNC and commercial environment, as well as retaining, you know, very strong credibility within the financial services. So that's really the short story.
Very good. When you started Executive Connections, had you worked in recruitment at that stage, or did you just jump in?
I had.
Oh yeah,
I had. I had worked in recruitment, and I was actually working within technology in IT. That was one of my areas. And then again, within the generalist side of that. So if it was a technology firm looking for a HR, a financial expert, I naturally kind of, you know, support the client within that. So part of my USP is kind of not necessarily specificity to an area, but my allegiance to a customer and that partnership with the customer and getting across all of their roles, which doesn't necessarily make you a generalist recruiter. It actually makes you quite specific to the sector with which you're in, but you can cover across, you know, marketing, finance, operation. You know, so those areas have grown significantly within the business. I can't say they've grown this year, but they have grown significantly within the business as a whole. So yeah, I was about 3.5-4 years in recruitment at that stage, and I was leading a team of about 12 people in my previous function. And then it just led me to believe that I could actually run, open, and drive my own business, and that's what I did at that time.
And did you have in 91? Very good. And did you have that sort of entrepreneurial spirit in you? Do you think before deciding on recruitment, do you always think it was sort of destined that you would set up your own thing?
I think in most of the roles that I had prior to that, I was always enjoying the kind of the frontline element of it. So whether I was in marketing or HR within the hotel industry, I was always looking at new ways to kind of do things, and, you know, whether it's a hiring, you know, methodology, or whether it was just how are we going to market this particular brand or this product to market. And I think when you run a small business like we are, I think you have to be pretty agile and you have to get across all of those functions. So finance, you know, became, you know, part of my piece to learn and grow within. So tearing apart a balance sheet was one of the first things that I had to become adept at. So, you know, that was interesting and that was new. And subsequently, you know, I've gone back to college, I've studied, I've got a master's. And you know, I hit that later on in life. So I'm one of those people who talk about, you know, it's never too late. And it genuinely isn't. It was the most beautiful learning experience I think I've had, in the sense that it's very usable at a later stage in life. It's very relevant. And I don't think it always is when we're 25 and 26 years of age. So I see huge value in that, I have to say, especially in my seat now in the role that I have.
Yeah, and something you mentioned there, Hilary, or alluded to at least, do you think it's more important to know the client or to know the, like, no recruiter can be an expert in finance, marketing, IT, et cetera, right, et cetera. Do you think it's more important that you really understand the culture and the organization that you're recruiting for than the technical aspects of the role, shall we say?
Yeah, I think you need to be adept at the technical aspect. But let's be honest, most people hire people for their behaviors rather than their technical abilities. So I think ultimately, getting that intimacy with your customer and understanding what they like and don't like, what works in their culture, what doesn't work within their culture. You know, when it comes to qualifications, previous experience, and you're using competency-based interviewing, it's not that complicated. And yet recruitment is a complex craft because you are managing those soft skills. And for me, that's where the attraction sat always, in building that relationship with the customer. So yeah, I mean, it's for me, it is learning the customer's needs, and it's the soft skills that sit comfortably with that. And I think that's what our clients are hiring for specifically today, within, you know, so that they need these specific soft skills. It is about being able to bend but not break, you know. It is about all of those elements and finding people who can storytell that demonstrate those skills and how to extract that from people. And that's the skill. So it's, you know, and that's built on trust. And then how you actually, you know, recount that to your customer and still, you know, having a strong duty of care to your candidate. And I don't think that's in every single recruitment business, but it is in ours.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, your career, did you say 33 years in recruitment? Is that what you said?
33 years.
Obviously, there's been a lot of changes, I'm sure, over that time. Yeah. What's the most notable stuff? I mean, before we get on to stuff that's been, you know, thrust upon us in the last year or so. But over those 33 years, what have been the big changes in the evolution of recruitment in Ireland?
For me, it is about that customer centricity. Before, many, many years ago, that culture of, you know, just putting somebody in a seat was enough. And, you know, that isn't enough anymore. It is the partnering that you have with your customer. It's your market intelligence. It's how you can share. It's how you can bring them along. And when they're looking for the unicorn, you need to deliver. You know, there's many people walk away from a difficult fill. And I think having the resilience and the tenacity to sit on a difficult hire and deliver upon it will get you more credibility than somebody who can just, you know, throw three CVs or four CVs across a desk. So I think you have to build on your personal brand. Social media is quite telling in the sense that your candidates will talk about you, your clients will talk about you. It's very open, it's very public, and you do need to manage that through your customers. And that's why part of our values is, you know, one of them in particular is delight, you know, like to delight not just our clients, but our candidates and each other. So we're more an accountable, I suppose, industry in this era than ever before. You know, you really have to justify your fee. There's other channels a client can go. You know, we keep bringing it back to that human, you know, interaction and that human level. AI is great. You know, we've all invested significantly in it over the years. We've invested in, you know, high-end technology ourselves specifically this year, and it will differentiate us. And I think things like that will make us different. That's so far removed, you know, from faxing a CV to a customer. You know, back in the day, I'm so long at it now, I think we were nearly sending pigeons with the CVs. So it's considerably evolved, but it is that delighting the customer, and it is really about, you know, understanding the pain and the unmet need. And I think we have to be very, very strong at uncovering that, which is, you know, which is the tough part. And it could be a leadership issue, it could be personality issues, it can be internal behavioral issues that we're managing through, and still trying to make an impact and make a change within that organization. So yeah, it's considerably evolved. It's much more interesting, it's much more challenging, it's highly strategic. So, you know, that's why we love the space we're in, which is that mid to senior level. We really feel we kind of embed ourselves in organizations and become a necessary need rather than a necessary evil. So there's a difference, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The, you know, that ability to stay with a really difficult field that you mentioned there, I really think that's what sets apart a good recruiter. Yeah. And the reason I say that, as someone who worked in the industry for a good period of time as well, I think a lot of people who call themselves recruiters post job ads to various job boards or LinkedIn as it now and deal with replies. They don't build those relationships with, you know, with a network of people across a particular skill set or a particular industry, etc. So therefore, all they'll ever have access to are the people who are quite actively looking yeah. for a role, which may not feel a difficult one.
Yeah, it probably won't. And a passive job seeker is generally a happier one, a more innovative one, and more, you know, that's just the way it evolves. They're being brought out of something. I mean, we're in a couple of processes at the moment, and I can honestly say that the feedback is, you know, to find that special candidate with those skills and actually follow the brief. Don't move from the brief. And if you do move from the brief, how do you communicate that up? You know, and why are we moving from the brief and justifying it and perhaps guiding the client in other ways of fulfilling the role, whether it's, you know, bringing in somebody at a lower level, but bringing them through and coaching and through a learning and development, you know, mechanism within the organization or whichever means. But it's just when a client has to ring you to ask you where you at with a role, there's a significant problem there. You know, you should be managing that up, and you should actually be managing that right up there to the hiring manager and sitting with the HR suite as well. I think that's really, really important. And getting access to that is often difficult, but you should be able to influence it by your justification model. So, you know, and past stories and case studies will always help a recruiter get to that level.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to become a trusted advisor to them. When you're recruiting for your own organization, Hillary, then what sort of skills are you looking at for someone who sits down in front of you across a desk or across a Zoom call, as it might be at the moment?
Well, we're unusual, I suppose, in the sense that it's an interesting question. You know, a lot of people say, you know, what are your past sales and you know, what are your revenue streams and all of that. There's a lot more value that a consultant can add to a business than just revenue streams. And they are important. We do have to follow that route. But ultimately, what we do look for is accountability. I don't want somebody working on a role, and none of our leadership team do, working on a role where it's not a priority. So how do you create that priority and that ability to be accountable? So accountability for us is number one. And we do ask candidates, how are they demonstrating that, you know, that are coming through our business to come and work for us? How do they demonstrate accountability? And sometimes that's, you know, some people say, I just, you know, I get CVs across to my customer. You know, yeah, that's part of it, but it's about never giving up, and it's about managing up. So we need people who've got that dexterity of skill within them, and they have to demonstrate that. So for us, that's really, really high on the agenda. Transparency as well, you know, in relation to having difficulty with the role, and to collaborate with the wider team, for us is massive. Like we're kind of an organization of a culture that we don't want to fail, and we're not going to sit back and watch anybody else fail. So how do we come on board? You know, we review from the outside in, and we still give the person the autonomy to drive it. So, you know, we need people to show vulnerability in order to keep our brand very strong and very alive, you know, and then we'll all deliver as a team. And that's hard to build, you know, so that's what we've been doing over the last, you know, particularly the last 2 to 3 years. You know, that's the kind of culture that we've been developing within the organization, which we've really, really enjoyed doing. And that's never ending, you know, that's change, and change, as we know, is a constant. So that's kind of what we look for when we're hiring.
Very good. what's happening out there at the moment in the marketplace? Are companies recruiting? What are the hot sectors? What are the hot skill sets? What are people looking for?
Well, look, I mean, the market, the good news is, yeah, there is hiring. You know, I think people are, they've moved away from the COVID talk, you know, that comfortable things that, you know, people were comfortable at doing, they're now doing a little bit, you know, they're more agile, I suppose, within the workforce. I think some clients are actually, you know, using up budget, I think, at this time of the year. So it's definitely become a little bit more lucrative within our own sector, but also a little bit more dynamic. So what's happening there is that, you know, we see massive change within finance functions. We've recently been assigned about 7, you know, group financial controller roles and financial director level roles, but also we've a high volume of legal roles coming through and governance led roles like risk and compliance. And across many of our sectors, and we specialize in banking and financial services. So, it's everything across from capital markets through to fund asset investment management and those specific sectors. So we're definitely growing. But what we're finding is the type of finance specialists. Okay, so data is coming a lot into the roles that we have live at the moment. So people, you know, with attribution capabilities that they can drill down on business intelligence. They can drill down on data, like data does tell the story, you know, and then analyzing that and using that within a scenario risk plan, or using that within a financial, you know, budget plan, or whatever means and requirements are necessary at that time. So, you know, strong commercial and operational focus is coming into all of the roles. It's kind of, it is that, you know, like it's bend and not break, you know, that those kind of individuals coming in. But one of the things we're also finding is L&D, you know, what learnings have you had in the latter year to 2 years? You know, how have you built on your current skill set? Clients are actually seeking that, you know, where is their learning? So if you're a chartered accountant and you qualified back in 2004 and you're whatever length of years, you know, post-qual, like what have you done to enhance your learning? So they're really interested in hearing about people who've moved into, say, you know, Black Belt, Lean Sigma, and mainly because business transformation is what's happening within organizations at the moment. They're seriously challenging their strategy. They're seriously looking at their business model canvas. It's a case of looking at capacity and resources. It's looking at, you know, channels and cost. It's looking at so many different things at the moment. So people who have, you know, worked within funding, acquisitions, divesting, investing, you know, they are all areas that we are seeing a significant influx of roles at the moment. And, you know, we are extremely busy. And, you know, being very honest, we've not all been busy throughout the whole year. So it's lovely to see, you know, that when it's beginning to come back and the surge of roles are beginning to arrive back, that, you know, you're getting those calls and they are those difficult to fill. But the other side of business that we're finding across specializations is business transformation. So, you know, even if you were to look at our retail banking, you know, environment, there's a huge, you know, there's been a huge amount of projects happening within business transformation, whether it's digital optimization, whether it's GDPR, you know, data management, security management, you know, process, back down to HR culture, driving change within that, and then looking at business optimization as a whole. So people who are agile at creating very strong target operating models are really sought after at the moment. I mean, it's either part of a function where you're a PM financial, you know, an ERP specialist, for example, or you're a pure business transformation expert. So that's going across the whole function. So they are people who understand how businesses run and can influence at C-suite. So we're finding we're getting a lot of roles within that area, devising strategy, developing new strategy, revisiting old strategy, changing behaviors to it. You know, it's definitely all evolving out there at the moment. On the mid to senior level, there's definitely growth within funds. Not all companies, I mean, when I say growth, there's growth in roles, but there may not necessarily be growth in headcount within the organizations because there has been movement. So it's all not about headcount growth. It is often about financial growth. So about 60 to 65% of our clients are going to grow their headcount, into 2021 Q1 and Q2. That's fact. We've talked to them. They've come back with those. We've gathered those statistics. The thing about it is they may have moved people within the business, you know, for areas where they've had to make some either temporary layoffs or furloughs, but are bringing people in other areas where they feel they have to optimize to get the best value and to get the best, you know, business case moving forward, whether that's a cash management expert or whether that's, you know, somebody, you know, working on liquidity or somebody working on their assets, or, you know, or whether that forms, you know, part of a role. And on that operational side, we're getting very busy within capital markets. And if you think about it, you know, funding is not readily available. So when you look at, you know, Bitcoin and how to actually, you know, leverage or, you know, get revenue released to you, it's going to be through a very different financial model than what has been historic. So that's going to change in 2021 as well. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of elements emerging, which is exciting. You know, are we skilled? Are we all skilled to go there? No. So those that are will definitely move forward within their careers, and they will gain, you know, competitive advantage that way without a shadow of a doubt. So yeah, I think even if you were to look at within our marketing and our executive sales division, e-commerce, okay, is massive. Online trading, absolutely huge. Onboarding. And if you think about onboarding, even from a recruitment point of view or HR point of view, you know, that's significant. You're looking at, you know, how are we doing it? How are we getting to the customer, even internally, you know, from that point of view? So we've all had to become pretty agile at our training methodologies, you know, who's in the room, you know, how are we doing that? What's the feedback? How are we managing our feedback? Do our HR policies look like? So you know, HR is changing. So I think every division has had, you know, elements of change across them, but certainly within marketing and within executive sales, we've been very busy again for the last two quarters of this year. You know, there's a lot out there in relation to account management and executive sales. Commercial directors are highly sought after, those with international expertise. And again, you know, still able to tear apart a balance sheet and understand cost, and not that attraction piece, you know, this model has always worked or this particular product is very attractive. It's moving away from that and kind of going, well, look what it brings. Look at the amount of output it takes to get it here. Look at the margins. So there's a lot of review of that happening within those sectors. But certainly within, you know, retail and product and innovation, and, you know, multinational corporations within food and drinks, you know, they've been pretty busy. But if you think about it, the supply chain, the international supply chain is going to be, it's going to be hit somewhat. And where is Ireland going to be on the map then with Brexit? So there's an awful lot of risk still in the market, especially with COVID and the joint element of Brexit hitting that together. So to become a very robust company, the processes, the systems, the people have to be top notch, absolute top notch to survive into the next 6 months to 12 yeah. months, you know, that's without doubt.
Lots of information there, Hilary. Obviously, the transformation, lots of the stuff is driven, I'm guessing, by COVID-19 in your opinion, especially in the financial services market. Some of the stuff you mentioned there, like about onboarding, for example, you know, I think lots of organizations are having to adapt to day one being, you know, in a remote setting. So there's challenges around that. It's probably been a difficult year. You alluded to that earlier, just in terms of how 2020 has progressed. My perception is everybody hit pause in March and tried to figure out what the hell was going on effectively. How did it play out for you guys in terms of just, you know, volumes of requisitions coming to you?
Yeah, we had a significant drop in roles. There's no doubt about that. And you know, we had far too much capacity. And, you know, that I think has hit most recruitment businesses across Ireland, and afield, obviously, or further afield. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people talk of it like it fell off a cliff, you know, like other industries as well, like, you know, the airline industry, etc. People didn't have time to recruit, whether they needed to or not. There was more embedding their remote workers. There was a focus on, you know, just mental stability and mental well-being, which is still, again, you know, featuring very, very strongly in the horizon of all HR experts into 2021. But, you know, it seriously impacted us and you know, a lot of people within our sector. And March and April, you know, were difficult. There's absolutely no doubt about that, because let's face it, we all thought it was a six week hiccup. You know, we didn't realize, you know, the longevity of it. And it was adjusting week on week, and it was the unknown and the uncertain, and trying to create certainty for your people whilst being as transparent as possible, but knowing you're upsetting people also en route. And a pandemic is a pandemic, you know. There's no nice ways to discuss it at many levels. It's just trying to have as much empathy to people's burdens and them for the business, you know, and trying to get that reciprocal, you know, sensation, I suppose, is often difficult balance to match. But, you know, we've come through it, and we've got a really resilient team, and it's been good, you know, and the cream has risen, and there's absolutely no doubt about that. And I think that that's what the market will tell. We all had to come out of our comfort zone, all had to come out of it. You know, you were realigning yourself on strategy, you're looking at your customer base, and you're driving cost. And that was very, very difficult. And again, we were managing the physical to the digital. How accountable are we all going to be working from home? And how motivated, you know, how do we sustain that, you know, long-term, our motivation, if there's little yield? So that all started evolving and changing. And by May and June, we saw fabulous glimmers of light. And I think we're lucky. I think it's because of our longevity in business. And I think it's because of the longstanding relationships. And they've stood to us. They've absolutely stood to us. And we're ever so grateful. So, yeah, it was a very difficult time. And we've patterns of behavior, everybody's patterns of behavior. So it was trying to change those, you know, teams meetings, you know, it was all excitement and giddy at the beginning. And then it's kind of like not another one. And now it's kind of, you know, it's brilliant. But we have heard from, you know, within our space that, you know, there's not as much as there should be in relation to, you know, that FaceTiming your candidates and really, you know, screening them, FaceTiming them, prepping them, you know, going through, you know, how the interview is going to be, what does it look like, how to prepare for it, going back over that all through FaceTime. So, like, we're big advocates of that. And I think, you know, that's helped us have the successes, because we've seen some seriously incredibly talented people not get the job because of, you know, a virtual interview.
And oh, that's interesting.
It really has been. It has been because of that. There's no doubt.
And why, specifically, why do you think that is? Is it their performance because they weren't used to the format, or is it the interviewer, or is it a combination of lots of things?
I think if you're sitting in front of a panel of three people, you can become pretty clipped to what you're saying. You don't want to talk too much. You're relying on them to guide you. And sometimes there's a delay. And, you know, technology has its place here. So if somebody's working from home and they're, you know, there's five other people on their broadband, you know, there's limitations. So that certainly impacted it, and the preparedness of that and how you plan around it. And then we were coaching and, you know, writing white papers on how to do that. And that really did help. Whereas now it's very interesting. You know, one of our candidates recently got a call from HR 1 week before their interview with our client company saying, how is technology for you at home? How do we enable you to do a better interview? What are the issues that could arise, and what support can we offer you? So that was significant for us. That was like, this is a company that has a massive, massive empathy for the interviewee's burden. And we don't always think that way. We come in with, you know, what are we going to find out about them? How are we going to challenge them in the interview? And actually turning up is a tough enough challenge these days if you've got a finite, you know, broadband link into your house that's limited to a degree and there's four or five people fighting on it, you know. So how do you enable that? So, you know, we've had to, you know, create hubs local to people within their 5K radius and support them in that way. And, you know, and get a preparedness for them. So that has been tough, especially when you see a superstar not get the job.
Yeah, that's That's really insightful now, I have to admit. I'm one I very possibly will steal, so thank you for that. what's the trend like now? Where are we, do you think, in terms of what 2021 may look like in terms of volumes, etc.? You mentioned the stat earlier, I think it was 60%+ were intending to recruit.
Yeah, I think in our sector, yes. I don't believe across all sectors. I think FMCG will remain buoyant. They're busy, you know. I think what's happening is with Brexit, I think there's a huge kind of surge to buy local. Now, we're going to have to buy local. There's too many levies coming our way, you know. So I think that's a positive. You hope. On, there's lots of negatives with Brexit. I mean, we're kind of, they've semi-prepared us. I mean, there's documentation out there. There's Enterprise Ireland, Leo. They're all giving us workshops on how to become better equipped in relation to managing this whole fallout. But there's going to be trade disruption. There's going to be costs. And I'm not sure we all know exactly what they are. I'm not sure the government do. And I think that lack of the unknown, like we've had so much uncertainty, but maybe we're more agile now as a community. Maybe we're better equipped now for the unknown. And I think it does show how companies are resilient and the passion that people have to drive their company well into the future. So, you know, we'll see what emerges on the other side, but certainly we see that business models are changing. Be prepared for that by your employer. You know, as I mentioned before, capability internally versus resources versus business need versus business unmet need. You know, what customer segments is your organization in? What are the revenue streams from that? What are the low hanging fruit? Are you in one of those sectors? Be strategic for yourself in a role if you're not. What are the activities, you know, within the company, and do they form a real part of the value proposition? And don't forget, you know, from a client perspective, I see purpose becoming very important. I know we've used that word a lot in the past and it was bandied about, but that it has to be purposeful to turn into work. There has to be something in it for the employee. There just has to be. And if we don't understand what that is of that employee, but we love them, we want to retain them, it's time to get underneath their skin and just really understand, you know, the scope of the broadness of the role they want or not. And using them in the right way where they feel valued. That's definitely going to start shining through based on candidate feedback that we've had.
Really interesting. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Hilary, thank you so much for joining us today. We touched on some really, really interesting stuff there. People can get in contact with Hilary via the Executive Connections website, which is executiveconnections.ie, or can email her directly at Hilary, that's HILARIE, at executiveconnections.ie. Hilary, thanks again.
Thank you very much, Declan. Pleasure.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.